She says her image was stolen, her voice mimicked, her identity weaponized. Not once, not twice, but over years and years. Hundreds of fake pornographic images sent to strangers and shared around the internet as if they were her, as if they were real. Men interacting with her, messages, photos, even phone calls, all part of something she says she had no control over. And at the centre of it, an allegation that the person responsible may have been someone she knew intimately, someone she trusted, someone she lived with. It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty. And today we are going to look at the deep fake porn allegations that are rocking Germany. Now, this certainly isn't just a story about AI. It's about humiliation. It's about control. It's about the type of violation that doesn't leave physical marks but can still follow you everywhere. And now it's exploded into public view with protests on the streets of Berlin and Hamburg, political rows in Parliament and urgent calls to change the law. So who are the people at the centre of this? And what exactly is being claimed? Well, with me today is Kate Connolly, Berlin correspondent with The Guardian. Kate, you're very welcome to News Talk Daily.
Hello, Ciara. Nice to be with you today.
We might, I suppose, just start by introducing the News Talk Daily listeners to the two central characters to this story, Colleen Fernandez and Christian Ullmann, a married couple in Germany. Tell me about them.
They are household names in Germany, known for their television appearances, for doing everything from hosting panel shows to moderating music programs. The couple, I think you could say probably the most prominent TV couple on German TV. They married in 2011. They have a child. And basically until they split not that long ago, I think last year they announced their split, which came as a big shock to the German public. They were sort of held up as the ideal celebrity couple in Germany.
So he was this prominent TV presenter, would have been on MTV back in the years, an actor and a producer. She was this really well-known, as you say, German TV presenter, extremely prominent on the national entertainment stage in Germany, the type of couple who appeared together on red carpets, who appeared in commercials together, who appeared in comedy shows as a couple, kind of skitting at their own everyday marriage. So extremely relatable. I'd imagine the type of couple that you would see not only necessarily on the tabloids when they split, but on the broadsheets as well.
Yes, although, I mean, I think you have to say here that they're real tabloid fodder, their lives. And there is more, I would say, of a distinction here with the way that broadsheets cover this type of story and the tabloids. The broadsheets would kind of probably look down on this a little bit and not even have necessarily wanted to have reported their split, maybe in a small column. But of course, since this row has escalated that we're going to talk more about, they have been compelled and as it were, sort of forced into. I mean, it's a debate that it's a discussion, a conversation that the whole country is having. And to go back to their role as this sort of celebrity couple that everybody kind of looked up to, they were on the one hand glamorous, good looking, and at the same time quite down to earth. So the adverts that you, one of them you mentioned, they did an advert for a pharmacy where they're both in bed discussing their digestive problems, you know. So there's this kind of nice mix of this glamour and the down to earth life, so that a lot of Germans could relate to them.
So to go to Colleen Fernandez, right, there is no dispute that she has been a victim of these pornographic deepfakes for years and years and years.
That's right. She's made a point of this. She's made it public. She's even made a documentary about it. You know, you yourself would only just have to go online and do a little bit of looking to find some evidence of this, even if you don't sort of do a deep look into what there is, if you're not exactly sure what sites people might go to. But it's definitely, the evidence is there. So she's been campaigning on this for some time before the whole thing escalated, once we found out, or at least once she alleged who was behind these this dissemination.
And we're talking about deepfakes, Kate. For listeners who might not fully grasp it, what kind of material are we talking about here?
Well, we're talking about fakes and deepfakes. Now, I am I have to say, fairly new to these distinctions. So I've been looking into it myself. So deepfakes are, they're very sophisticated ways of taking an image of somebody and making them very extremely lifelike, from the, you know, the body image to the voice impersonation. So you get the whole of the, you know, the whole of the person, as it were. Extremely difficult to detect that they are fake. And fake images, they could be taken from deep fakes, but they could also just be taken from images of the person and slightly kind of doctored or distorted with, you know, things as basic as kind of Photoshop technology. It's the less sophisticated than the sophisticated. And then you've got what makes that, I think, more complicated is that you then get those images sort of snowballing or being picked up and used again and regurgitating them, spreading them more, maybe turning them into kind of satirical images, you know, messing about with them. So it then becomes quite difficult to find out the origin of them.
And in terms of Colleen herself, what exactly was happening? What was she reporting was happening to her?
Well, she was reporting the fact that her image had been taken and debased, and she was seen in very degrading positions. And she called it virtual rape, that there were images online of her effectively being raped. I have not personally looked at the images. I've just heard what her description of them has been. She's been on German television talking about it, really upset, as she tells what she's been looking at for a long time. But as she talks about it again, it's clearly very distressing for her to even have to think about what she has seen in the way in which her body has been debased. And then the phone sex, these are apparently services where it appears that she is offering herself up for dates to men, and men who are contacting her supposedly think that they are actually literally getting in touch with Colleen Fernandez, the celebrity. The voice with which she talks to them is her voice, effectively, because her voice has been taken and copied. So to all intents and purposes, it is her, for anybody who is looking at these images online.
So it was messages, images, exchanges, even simulated phone interactions with the New York Times reporting up to 30 men, lots of them strangers, but these images were actually being sent to some of her colleagues as well.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think in some cases sent to people saying, do you know that this is out there? In other cases, you know, it's sort of a titillating exchange over them. And apparently people she know coming back and telling her that this was out there. But yeah, these men who she effectively, you know, knew maybe second, third hand, who believed that they were talking to her and then thought that there was some legitimacy to this exchange or this communication, which, I mean, it sounds to you and I kind of weird that you wouldn't detect, or, you know, but maybe it was just their wishful thinking that they really did want to be communicating with this woman.
I mean, the sense of violation that she must have had, the sense that she had no control over her own identity. And yet she spent years and years, almost a decade, trying to get to the bottom of this, as you would. As you say, she took part in this documentary back in 2024, discussing the abuse that she was experiencing because of what was happening online and her efforts to try and expose the identity of the person or persons behind this.
Yeah, so she did. She went to several countries and tried to trace her abusers, basically. And she said she felt that she had been virtually abused, but that was almost as bad as being abused in real life, as it were. And the documentary had quite an impact, but she didn't feel that it reached the places that she wanted it to reach. So she made a complaint to German police in the town where she had been living at the time, Itzehoe, in northern Germany. And the police there opened an investigation, but it didn't last very long. They said that they closed it in June, I think it was last year, or rather suspended it because they didn't have sufficient information. They talked about having no leads because they said it was extremely difficult to trace, as we were discussing earlier, to trace the source of the images. So that left her in this sort of limbo, just suspended there with this all this information, all this evidence, but nobody who would really listen to her.
So let's then go to this very recent interview in Der Spiegel, which is, I think, Germany's leading weekly news magazine, a major influential media brand within Germany. I'm sure it's a title that even our listeners will be familiar with. So she gives this interview to them last week, and it's pretty explosive. Tell me what she says.
So in this, she outlined that her husband had admitted to her, she said, when she had confronted him, or even after she had made this documentary, that he had been orchestrating this campaign against her.
So she named him as her chief suspect.
She named him as chief suspect, which he denies. His lawyer has said they will take legal action against Spiegel. So this has taken this story in a whole new direction. She said that the virtual abuse that she has alleged that her husband meted out on her was carried out for over a decade, and suggested that he had also got other people involved to disseminate this information. She's saying that he created fake social media profiles in her name, so they appeared to be from her, and used these profiles to spread the deepfake images of her, and also partly through these phone services to initiate online affairs with other people. And she said that the confession in this Spiegel interview, she said the confession he made to her was on Christmas Day 2024, and she said getting that information from him after all this investigation that she'd done was like receiving the news of somebody close to her having died.
So to be clear, Christian Ullmann hasn't spoken himself. I know he hasn't done any interviews with the press, but through his lawyers, he categorically denies all of these allegations, and he said legal proceedings will be pursued against Der Spiegel. But I would imagine there was a huge response to that interview in Germany, Kate.
Yeah, there has been. I mean, again, to go into a little bit of more detail of that and what has sparked the public interest, or even say people who didn't know about this are now aware of it, because obviously it's not been just in Spiegel, which is a serious, well-respected news magazine. It's been picked up by everybody else, as you had said before, the serious media as well as the tabloids. And she goes into detail, which a lot of women have said they can relate to. She says it was a climate of force and coercion and sustained violence within her marriage as well, and instances where he had grabbed her or shoved her around, and said that this had started around 2012. So again, these are allegations that Christian Ullmann has denied. And she'd said to him in this interview, and in sort of message to him, that she gave him, after he had allegedly confessed to her, she said to him, "You've raped me virtually." So the reaction to this has been, it's got a lot of people out on the streets, as you said at the beginning, of Berlin and Hamburg, two major German cities. We've had a group of about 250 women from prominent worlds in Germany, from politics, business, culture, who've published a list of 10 demands. But also then we've had these quite big rallies drawing tens of thousands of protesters, one of which just over a week ago gathered at the Brandenburg Gate in Berlin, and very strong messages and placards that people were holding up. For example, AI won't make our bodies yours, and others were holding up the placard saying the phrase that many of your listeners will probably have heard being used by Gisèle Pelicot. This is the French woman whose husband was convicted last year of bringing dozens of men to rape her while she was unconscious and drugged. And she used the phrase, "Shame has to change sides." So this was the slogan that was being held up by a lot of people at these rallies.
The case has really become a symbol, I think, of wider anger within Germany about digital abuse and the fact that so many people feel that they are insufficiently protected by the law there. But what's also been really interesting is that Fernandes herself has obviously attended these rallies. She's addressed the crowds. She said that she's had to wear a bulletproof vest because she herself has been facing death threats since she did this interview.
Yeah, that's right. That's what she has said when she went on stage in her home city of Hamburg last week, and she said this to the crowd, you know, I am wearing a bulletproof vest, I'm under police protection because I am getting these threats. And this was a shock, you know, it came as a really shocking news to people that this was the case. But actually, you know, if one sees it in the wider context of similar cases, and you see the abuse that she has been getting online, you know, it doesn't feel like this is some overreaction on her part. And the police protection underscores this as well.
I mean, she described Germany as a refuge for perpetrators. She says the existing laws that are in place haven't kept pace with technological change. And this has led to a real political backlash here against the government within Germany for not moving faster on this. But more than that, Friedrich Merz himself, the Chancellor, has been criticised for his actual response to this story, with people saying that he really bungled his response to this, didn't he?
Exactly. We know Friedrich Merz, as he's a conservative, he's the head of the Christian Democrats, he's Germany's chancellor, obviously. He's never been known for his, let's say, sympathy towards women's issues. And in a parliamentary debate that was going on last week for 2 days, at which the justice minister addressed the rage and said, you know, she realised that German legislation had to change. But we had Merz basically blaming the rise in violence against women on the immigrant population, which triggered a response, an enthusiastic response from some in his party in the parliament, and also from the far-right AfD, the opposition party, who that is one of their main lines, you know, immigrants are criminals and sexual pests, but at the same time has drawn a huge angry response from many people who say he is failing to see the reality of domestic violence in Germany, that often it's white German men who are the perpetrators of this.
Stepping back for a moment, Kate, does this feel like a real turning point moment for Germany, that these allegations might finally get the law changed and that this kind of crime will be taken seriously?
It does indeed. I mean, I think we should focus just briefly on the same debates as we've just touched on, the justice minister, what she said, Stephanie Hubig. She's from the Social Democrats Party. And she said that, you know, the new legislation that she is planning would make it easier for women or for people to pursue people who were creating pornographic fake or deepfake images and recordings of them in secret. And these crimes would be punishable with up to 2 years in prison. And I think what she said is quite important. She said the technology is new, but the underlying motive is age old. Mm. And she said that it was all about power, humiliation and control. And she also made a point of saying that social media platforms should be made more accountable for the content. She talked about Elon Musk's X, where, of course, as we know, this AI chatbot Grok most recently has led to a big explosion of sexualized images, manipulated sexualized images on the site. And even though there's been some clamping down of that, a lot of those images are out there and it's affected a lot of people. And Hubig said that digital violence cannot be a business model. And she said it was really important to ensure that through this debate and the new legislation that, to quote, shame truly shifts.
Kate Connolly in Berlin, thanks so much for joining us here today on News Talk Daily. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, Kira.
Well, as we close today's episode of News Talk Daily, I think it's important to acknowledge that this is a story that remains complex and contested. Colleen Fernandes, she has shared her account of what she says has happened, but her husband has firmly denied all allegations made against him, and there's been no definitive legal resolution, and I think that distinction does matter. But what also matters in all of this, regardless of where the truth ultimately lies, is how seriously claims like these are treated in the moment that they're raised. And in her case, her concerns, it appears to me, were not met with the urgency or support that she deserved. And she shouldn't have had to endure that for years, let alone over the course of a decade. So the reality raises much broader questions that go far beyond one relationship or one set of allegations. And in a world where so much of our lives are lived online, the systems meant to protect people, it appears, are still catching up. There must be clear pathways for help, for accountability, and for protection. This case should stand as a warning. Well, that's it from us today. Thanks for listening.